Hello, and welcome to Season 8 of the Canadian Women's Foundation podcast, All Right, Now What? Gender equality and justice, where we live, work, learn, and play, is the goal, and it makes life better for everyone. All Right, Now What? Remains a space where we ask, how do we move from awareness to action? But this season, we're also shifting the story. Through powerful storytelling, expert interviews, and bold conversations, we'll explore what true equity can look like, especially for those who are too often silenced or overlooked. The work of the Canadian Women's Foundation and its partners takes place on traditional First Nations, Inuit, and Métis territories. We are grateful for the opportunity to meet and work on this land. However, we recognize that land acknowledgements are not enough. We need to pursue truth, reconciliation, decolonization, and allyship in an ongoing effort to make right with all our relations. I'm Louise O'Shea at the Canadian Women's Foundation. Today, we're joined by Mezi, a leader whose national and global advocacy is transforming how we understand and respond to economic abuse in Canada. Mezi shares how her lived experience, decades of work in finance, digital innovation, and gender equality, and her leadership at the Canadian Centre for Women's Empowerment led her to help build the national infrastructure needed to prevent economic abuse. We'll explore why financial safety is fundamental to survivor safety and how coordinated action across banking, government, housing, justice, and community services can move us toward meaningful change. And finally, Mezi leaves us with practical ways every sector, from finance to technology to community organizations, can help build a future where economic justice is recognized as one of the core pillars of gender equality. Mezi, thank you so much for being on the podcast today. It sounds like such a busy time in your world, and you're coming to us from the House of Commons, but we are thrilled to have you on All Right, Now What today. So thanks for being here. And we have to start off with congratulations on receiving the Governor General's Award in commemoration of the Persons Case Medal. That must be a really big moment of recognition. Can you share the journey that brought you to this work and to that medal?
Yeah, thank you so much again. So it's very, humbling and exciting moment because being recognized by the Governor of General and then Ministry of Women and Gender Equality, as you know, it's really, really very important reminder to fight gender equality in this country. So as you know, I'm the founder of the Canadian Centre for Women Empowerment, and also I'm the co-founder of the International Coalition Against Economic Abuse. So this recognition truly reflects the journey rooted in leadership, research, and system transformation to end, economic abuse. So my background actually, for the past two decades, my work mostly focused on strengthening institutions, whether in global health, financial inclusion, digital innovation, and gender equality. So through that work with the government and bank, international organization, one of the major gaps I saw, even as someone also have lived experience, is, economic abuse or economic harm. There was, no one mentioned in Canada in explicitly to address gender-based violence, yet our financial and social system had no, framework to address it. So when I found this organization, definitely I have a very clear, vision. So I went to build the national infrastructure to combat economic and financial abuse. As you know, this form of abuse is a critical barrier for a woman to live abusive relationship. And then, of course, we didn't create research and policy, leadership, but we built the infrastructure where service providers, financial institutions, they can respond economic and, financial abuse. So, as you know, I'm the first person to raise this issue as a national level, including a call to action with the federal government. So over the year, our work is, growing from national to global movement. So this award is all about to recognize my leadership. For example, one of the most interesting things actually what we did through my leadership is, we mobilize 60 organizations across Canada to inform the National Action Plan to Gender-Based Violence, and we were making sure that economic and financial abuse is included in the National Action Plan. And as you know, also last month, the Canadian government announced the first ever Code of Conduct on Prevention of Financial Abuse. This is also a historic milestone that established national expectation on how banks prevent, identify, and respond, you know, economic abuse. So this is significantly clear. So even as you know, the budget 2025 also referred 17 times, which is historical for us. And then, you know, signing the major shift toward financial safety to policy reform to end gender-based violence. So there's a number of things, you know, through our journey, and then also our work is also recognized by the UN and the Commonwealth Bank and global financial leaders. And we also conducted, you know, two national research, which really helped also for House of Commons, some of the economic and financial abuse studies. We also, you know, developed a number of digital tools, including the first ever Canadians economic abuse screening tool. And now it's widely used across shelters and service sectors to early identify and coordinate this response. And in addition to that, of course, we develop also mobile app for victims so that they can understand and protect themselves for financial abuse. So this award honors not only my leadership, but also, you know, the collective work of our partners, you know, policymakers and financial institution and organization who believe, like I do, that economic justice is fundamental for gender equality. So this award is honors all our work, not only mine, but there are a lot of survivors behind my work, behind our policy recommendation, behind our research. So that's all about, and it's a reminder for me to keep moving forward in pushing the systems and making sure that survivor voices included in any policy decision.
Can you explain to us, Mezi, what is meant by the term financial justice and the work that you're doing against economic abuse? Can you break that down for our listeners?
Economic abuse is the most unrecorded, hidden, and unnoticed form of violence. And it's a behavior that controls, limits, or sabotages person access, you know, money, resource, opportunities. And that makes persons also financial independence. For example, like, you know, controlling someone's bank account, forcing them to take a loan or credit, tracking someone's, you know, spending, stealing monies, assets, and also inhibiting someone not to go back to workforce and go back to also education. So this is a form of gender-based violence, which is underreported because of the systemic nature. And plus, as you know, financial and economic matter is very private in many multicultural society. And violence is also very private matters. So people, we don't talk about it. But when you see the statistics, women who experience economic, you know, gender-based violence experience almost 96% they experience, you know, economic abuse. Even we did a research in Ottawa. So survivors, they told us, 93% of survivors told us their money has been controlled. 86% also, they told us they were forced to leave their job. So this is a tactic, you know, abuser use to take the power from a woman. So this is kind of the term we use. So my organization, we are addressing the broader term of economic abuse. And also there is a term financial abuse, which is specifically focused on the financial matter. But like ours is very broad, including even restricting transportation access, medications, education, as I said, you know, employment. It's all about taking survivors' economic power indirectly, because this issue is not even clearly criminal in this country, because, as you know, coercive control is still, you know, under study. So, yeah, this is how we use these terms. And then it's really, really very painful, by the way. And this form of violence usually accompanied by physical, you know, psychological and sexual violence. And for survivor to heal from such kind of abuse, it takes so long. Even some survivors, they go through bankruptcy. As you know, the financial institution is not designed to help survivors. The justice system also, it doesn't help for many survivors. So it takes so long, and it will continue also after separation and divorce. And we have seen also the generation impact on the young, you know, the younger population. So this is all about economic abuse.
Thank you. That's so helpful to understand sort of the terms of your work and what you're working towards. You mentioned about the medal, all the progress that you and your team and the sector have made to get you to that point of the award and that recognition. But can you tell us about some of the challenges about working in this area? You've obviously mentioned the challenge around data and research, because so many of these indicators are non-apparent and have to be designated, I guess. So can you tell us a little bit more about the challenges in this work of economic abuse?
Yeah, absolutely. There are several challenges, as you know, even ending gender-based violence. As you know, Canada is way behind, even from G7 country. As you know, even we lost 187 women in 2024 with femicide. You can imagine how even gender-based violence by itself, how it's really, really affecting our work, our economy, and our justice system. So from the economic abuse prevention point, one of the big barrier is access to data, and my organization working at the intersections of finance, justice, technology, and policy. And we have seen that there is no research, no policy, no clear framework on how to respond to economic abuse. Of course, my organization right now, we are working. And also one of the challenges, economic abuse has no formal definition in Canada. No shared data, as I said, no regulatory standard. So that makes the problem is very complicated. So our organization, again, trying to bring some best practice from all over the world and introducing in Canada. So the second challenge, even for survivors and service providers, even for advocates like us, is, we have banks, social services, housing provider, police, you know, the legal clinic. And there is no any standard coordinated, response for these issues. There is no single sector can address economic abuse on its own. So my organization right now, we're doing our within collaboration with few agency. So this fragmentation slow down the solution. And then again, it create a gap in survivor safety. And the other challenges is, as I mentioned even earlier, is our financial system were never designed in safety in mind. Traditional banking model didn't consider coerced debt, digital monitoring and financial exploitation. Of course, there are programs that help us to support human traffic survivors. But what we are seeing right now is even fraud prevention tools are they were not built specifically for survivors of gender-based violence. So this challenge is not about individual, there are a lot of structural issues. And that's why my organization focuses on institutional reform, policy leadership, cross-sectoral alignment, rather than individual intervention. So, and then the other challenge is also lack of awareness, this form of violence, it affects all women across Canada. But most importantly, there are individuals who's impacted, like newcomers, refugee women, women who have diverse identities, indigenous people, because of our colonization and the economic structure. So these women are, people are excluded from the system. So again, this form of violence also, it multiply the economic barrier to access and, to heal and to thrive. So there's a number of, barriers every time, survivors also the experience, even like some service sector, for example, I can mention the energy sector, the utility sectors. It's really very hard for a woman, to get those services after they leave abusive relationship because they don't have good credit, they don't have a good banking informations. And in addition to that as well, someone also language barrier, because financial matter is a very, very taboo in many society. And let alone to talk about gender-based violence, it's really, really very challenging. So that's why my organization now, as you know, we're running every year Help Us Rise campaign. This campaign is a nationwide campaign. We educate service providers, financial institution leaders, survivors, all over the countries to understand what is economic abuse, what's coercive debt, what's financial crime, how they could protect themselves, even how they could talk to bank, because this is a very important conversation. We are engaging survivors, you know, to have their confidence so that they can negotiate their economic rights. So these are the number of barriers. And also, as you know, this sector is also underfunded. We're a very small organization doing this all work across Canada. So resource is also one of the challenges. As you know, system reform, it needs a continuous investment and also accountabilities. And but of course, this year we have seen the commitment of the federal government, but it should be a sectoral, you know, work. And system changes, like, you know, as you know, it must be coordinated and it needs also continuous investment. So this is also another, you know, challenge we have seen. And then the other challenge is also access to justice, as you know. So the justice sector is very fragmented. Survivors are struggling to access, you know, even for gender-based violence. And plus the legal system also, they don't understand the complexity and then the impacts of, you know, economic and financial abuse. So now my organization also trying to engage lawyers across Canada, and then so that they can understand, you know, the economic impact and, you know, the other, you know, work. And also we did, of course, some, you know, education materials, you know, development with other countries. For example, the state of Florida University, they develop education material for their lawyers, you know, but in Canada, still we are not yet there. And hopefully for the coming few years, we want to engage also people who works also in the justice sector. So the challenge is so broad, but what we have seen is there's a hope. We have seen that hope, you know, last month. So we'll continue disrupting the system. We'll continue raising awareness. We'll continue building the economic safeties of women in this country.
And when you say, Mezi, that your organization is, you know, looking around the world at others and bringing standards and regulation into Canada, who is doing it well, or is there anyone doing this well?
Yes. So as I mentioned earlier, we're also one of the co-founding members of the Internal Coalition in collaboration with United Kingdom and Australia. So I can give you an example, or, you know, from, you know, UK. So UK, they started this work actually many years ago. For example, one of the success stories, there is a Domestic Abuse Act. This act exclusively mentions economic abuse. And in addition to that, they have also a code of conduct that regulates banks. And this code of conduct, it supports survivors to access banking products and services and even financial support from financial institutions. And also economic abuse is also very normal in those countries. And the Australia Bankers Association also, they joined, you know, many global movements, of course, our movement as well. So we have seen that sectors are working together. For example, the mortgage, the insurance, the electricity, the telecom, those are the sectors that are working closely in many countries. So that's why my organization, when we start this work, we invited all sectors and built our national economic justice, you know, task force. So even this year, we collected also some data on how is the responses from victims in access to mortgage and insurance. As you know, some abuse survivors, they may have a joint asset and joint mortgage, and we want to know how the services are available. In addition to that, we want to know about, like, you know, what are the barriers. So because we learn is that many victims also, they traumatized because the sectors are not trauma informed in many ways. So we learned a lot of even New Zealand, for example, last week they introduced the code of conduct for lending practice. As you know, in Canada, predatory lending is high. We learned that victims were forced to pay a lot of interest rate, which is heartbreaking. So we're continuing bringing those experts. So last 2 years ago, we organized the first global conference. We invited those banks like Commonwealth Bank, HSBC, you know, UK, from Canada, FCSC, and then, you know, experts from, you know, Scotia Bank. We invited, and then we also, you know, organized experience sharing events, and we come up with 12 call to action for the Canadian banks. So now we are working with, you know, Canadian Bankers Associations and other ally, And now the response is so, you know, overwhelming, and I'm very grateful for that. So as I said, globally, yeah, those European countries are there way, way advanced. And if you go to UK, you'll see a number of billboards, which is endorsed by HSBC UK. Even 2 years ago after pandemic, there was a very big billboard in London. It talks about economic abuse, which was sponsored by the bank. So this is a thing we want to bring in Canada.
That's fascinating. Thank you. Thank you for the comparison. You've talked about some of the solutions that you feel hopeful about, and that you've been a part of. Can you tell us more about what is really working? I mean, maybe also a bit more around your advocacy around the recent budget and your reaction to that.
Yeah, in terms of my reaction, as you see on media, I'm so excited because we were asking consistently, demanding the government to have a code of conduct in Canada, because non-for-profit organization, we don't have the capacity, we don't have the resource, we don't have even the expertise to develop institutional reform in financial institutions. So it should be a government job. So I'm so happy, and I'm so also honored to be invited as a keynote speaker as a House of Commons on the announcement. So I'm very happy for that. So that's my reaction. And this reaction is not only mine. There is 1,000 survivors who lost their credit card, who lost their identity, who lost, you know, their, you know, financial rights in many ways. So it just gives a hope even for next generation. So that's my reaction. So in terms of shifting, I would suggest, like, you know, if we need to stop, you know, framing gender-based violence as only social issue, and understanding as economic and systemic issues, the most important thing. Because as economic justice advocate, I always say, financial safety is not a side topic. It should be a fundamental pillar for survivor safety. Because, you know, when you look closely at our financial ecosystem, like a credit, banking product, even e-transfer and lending practice, this system either protect people or puts them in a risk, as you know. So most people, they don't realize economic harm is even embedded in a very, you know, architecture of our institution. So when we shift the narration into like economic security, definitely we unlock the entire level of prevention in our response. So so changing the narration is not about the language, but it's all about, you know, the power and policy and long-term transformation even for the economy. So because when we share even the story, we change the system. That's what I do even from my lived experience. I was sharing my journey in many ways, and that really, really helped us to shape. So we need also to start to talk about survivor wealth, Louise, because when we think about survivors, there is a, in many even medias and even in many, many decision makers, we think about survivors, they live in poverty. Of course, most survivors, because of systemic barriers, they live in poverty, but they need, you know, economic empowerment support in many ways, because we have a beautiful shelter bed out there. We have a good restraining order, but what survivors, they demand is trauma-informed, inclusive, economic empowerment that sustain their wealth. So this is the thing now we are advocating. We need to change that, you know, narration, and we need to change also in our mindset so that survivors, they will have a long-term economic stability. So this is kind of, you know, my reflections and then my advocacy. And hopefully Canada will continue. I don't know if you also know, Minister Champagne also, you know, announced it for the establishment of new agency that fights fraud. So most of survivors also exposed for many, many financial fraud, including romance scam. So this is also another hope for many people, because of the AI revolution now we are also perpetuating women's in many ways. And as you know, we are on the 16 days of activism. It's all about digital safety. So I think this is a huge, like, you know, movement in the future, needs investment so that like survivor would be part of the economy.
And to close today, Mezzi, all right, now what? So how can each of us take action or get involved to support, you know, your advocacy against economic abuse? What does that look like on an individual and community level beyond, you know, the deep policy work that you're doing?
Yeah, that is a question I love, by the way, because our work truly belongs to all of us, you know, Louise, because disrupting the sector, it needs collaborative effort, and every sector, as I say, the finance, the technology, government, the community, even the academia has a role to play in strengthening financial safety. So first, I encourage all organizations to include and integrate financial safety in their policies. Even a simple internal question can open the door. For example, like, how does your institution protect women from economic harm? So, you know, this year what we did actually a website audit of the government of Canada, close to 13 federal government, you know, organizations, including Justice Canada, Wage, Public Health Canada, and we did found that there is no any government agency clearly even spell out economic abuse. I was very, very surprised. So, and then so we also developed, you know, a number of, you know, resources for the government. And then, hey, you know what? You missed economic abuse, which is a very important thing. And then include. So this is kind of the thing what we would love to see. So we'll love encourage organization, making sure that economic abuse is included in all gender-based violence, you know, work. And the second thing is, would love also to align, especially financial institution, and to support, you know, the code of conduct, you know, development. And then the third thing is, if, you know, I didn't mention actually my organization, we have a standard training. It's called Economic Abuse Prevention Training. And we have a model called SHIELD. SHIELD is all about a new model that equip professionals to identify economic harm. So this training is build competency and also, you know, expertise in the sector. So we'd love to provide that training for anyone else. And the fourth thing is, I will ask everyone to collaborate on our national and, you know, global effort. As I mentioned, every November, we have a Help Us Rise campaign, our international coalitions, especially the Help Us Rise campaign. We call all organizations who work on gender-based violence to come in and to amplify the voice of survivors. This is very important. That's how we bring a change. And then also the other thing is, like, you know, finally use your own influence, you know, whether you are a policymaker, corporate executives, community leaders, you know, even an educator, your voice shapes the narrative. You know, there's a huge misunderstanding in narrative out there. So your action can, you know, advance policy change, set standard, and help also transform how we think about economic safety in Canada. Because at the end of the day, economic justice is not the responsibility of one sector. It's a collective, you know, responsibility. So when we move together, you know, we strengthen our institution, protect our community, and build also more equitable and resilient economy everywhere. So gender-based violence is very important, you know, issues in our country. As you know, the femicide rate, it was so heartbreaking. Actually, now on December 6th, we have a vigil here in Ottawa, and also my organization launched also our own campaign this time. So we need to fight gender-based violence and making sure that, you know, survivors' voice, survivors' economies be part of the conversation. So that this is my ask, you know, and this is also the solution, I believe.
And recognizing that if we can change the experience of one individual, I'm sure, you know, that is worth it. And so even in your community amongst, you know, friends, families, like bringing the conversation to a different level so that it doesn't feel as uncomfortable, no matter who it may be with, someone at your workplace or someone that you meet. I'm, you know, so many of the issues that we cover here on All Right Now What, it is also about that individual one life as well as the systemic change. So recognizing that and being more aware of these issues, I'm sure can help as well.
Yeah, that's great. That's a very important point you mentioned. And then also one thing I didn't mention. So November 26th is, it's a National Economic Abuse Awareness Day. This day started in 2019 in Canada by myself, because I was very vocal for this issue. And now this day is recognized in many cities across Canada, including with some provincial governments. And now it's expanded in the UK, in Australia, in New Zealand, in South Africa. And then also now we are asking the United Nations to have, you know, dedicated a global day. So I also encourage anyone else for next year, if you want to develop, you know, any programs or services, we can amplify this work together. So we learned that how November 26th mobilized many banks across Canada, many service providers, even victims, you know, truly speaking. I remember we shared stories of Indigenous women survivors of financial and economic abuse in 2020 on November. I remember, so that time, there is 1,000 survivors, they reached out us and they told us, this is my story. I didn't know even it has a name. And, you know, this is kind of the thing we heard. So, because the thing is, conversation is the most important thing for healing. And then I will encourage anyone who listen to this podcast and to reach out to us. We have a number of resources. We have also a mobile app for victims, you know, in 5 languages. Any victims, they can upload. It's called STEER. They can access through our website. So survivors, you are not alone. There's a number of resources for you. There is a number of resources available for you. And also we have a financial empowerment, you know, program for survivors. It's 8 weeks financial empowerment, trauma-informed, violence-informed, very tailored to the survivors. So this training is all about on how they could detangle their bank account, asset divisions, and specific also to address their own needs. So I encourage any woman like who experience financial and economic abuse to come and then to learn about, you know, your situation. We have also credit repairing, you know, services. We have a coaching. So for any survivors, they can come and access that program. So thank you so much.
Thank you for helping shift the story on safety, leadership, justice, power, and rights. You can visit CanadianWomen.org today to learn more and stay connected. We believe everyone should be able to exist without fear of harassment or abuse. You can help make that a reality. Text SAFE, S-A-F-E, to 20222 to give $10 and support women, girls, and gender diverse people throughout Canada. Small actions can lead to big changes. We appreciate your support.